You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your co-host, Mr. Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is the editor-in-chief of the Bison Report, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, it's been a minute or two. How are things for you here on a Thursday?
Good. Yeah, obviously, we apologize for the lack of a show over Thanksgiving break. Things just didn't work out schedule-wise for Ryan and I. And the North Dakota State Bison did not have a game, a football game anyway, to preview. So we were off that week, but we are back at it, ready to roll with a ton of Bison basketball topics to take care of, a ton of, obviously, football to preview as NDSU's road to the FCS championship looks pretty laid out as far as the likely opponents coming to the Fargo Dome. And then some interesting FCS football news as a whole, that even though we are not a general FCS podcast, this is going to affect a likely opponent for NDSU. And so it's something we feel like we have to talk about.
All right, so let's start with the news part of this podcast. When we look at this FCS playoff bracket, you look at last week, Montana State's able to take care of Incarnate Ward 35-14. And so that's who your number one overall seed. NDSU is going to be taking on this Montana State team. Before we get into Montana State, Ross, do you have any general thoughts on this Montana State team that is going to be coming into the Fargo Dome?
I mean, it's tough, you know, to really expect a ton out of Montana State just because of the struggles historically that Big Sky teams have had playing NDSU in the playoffs. I know I said that about the CAA before James Madison came to town in 2016, but that is not something that I see happening here. They're two completely stylistically different football teams, and I just, you know, in general, the expectations that I would have are not incredibly high for Montana State.
So when you look at the news that came out, NDSU now has the offensive player of the year, the defensive player of the year. I don't think the Easton Stick news being named the Missouri Valley Conference player of the year surprised anybody, but does the Jabril Cox news surprise you at all?
I mean, maybe just a little bit. I don't think there's any question that Jabril is the most talented or the most gifted defensive player in the conference. I think that's pretty clear. But just his, you know, he didn't have the Brett Taylor, you know, he wasn't averaging 17 tackles a game, but he just did little things here and there that made big, big differences in the games. The two pick sixes, you know, I think it was four total interceptions, somewhere between four and six sacks, and then you do have some tackles for loss and decent tackling totals. And I think maybe it could potentially be a sign of just the voters or the coaches, whoever is involved in selecting these, having a chance now with the technology that's available to watch more of the games and really see how effective Cox is and how much he impacts the game and not just paying attention to the box score. So I think, honestly, it could be a sign of a really positive direction for those that are paying attention to who to vote for in these things. And it's not just like, all right, well, this DB has the most interceptions or this linebacker has the most tackles, this defensive end has the most sacks. Let's go from there. So certainly proud of Easton, and something, you know, Kleiman always mentions, puts forth is that the simple fact, you know, Carson Wentz was never even all Missouri Valley Conference. Makes a ton of sense to senior year. Junior year was not voted for that award either. And of course, the injury is senior year. But this is kind of a career achievement type of thing for Stick. I think he definitely was the best player in the conference. I think he's the best player in the subdivision. But it's an impressive award nonetheless. So happy for Easton, happy for Jabril. And if he plays out his eligibility at NDSU, I mean, there's two more years of this kid. So pretty wild, pretty exciting stuff.
The other big news topic we got to talk about is on the basketball side of things, where point guard Cameron Hunter fractured his wrist, and now he is going to be out 6 weeks. Now, I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but initial thoughts and initial impressions here, as NESU is going to have to be looking at some different options to back up Vinny Shahid at the point guard position.
Yeah, it's a huge blow. I mean, this is a team that really got aggressive in scheduling. The mid-major games that they've been taking have been against teams that are picked to finish in the top of their leagues, and the high-major game that they took was against the best team in college basketball, you know, kind of hands down at this point after their victory over Duke. So this is just a rough spot. They're already without a starter in Jackson Notek. Now they're without their most experienced point guard, their top backup point guard, and this is going to be crunch time with Hunter out 6 weeks. For this team to buckle down and really figure out who they are before they get into Summit League play. That's the nice thing about the 6 week, you know, timeline, is you are looking likely at an early to mid January return, which is when you're going to start playing Summit League games anyway. And you know, that's something we'll talk about in a second, but I just want Bison basketball fans to understand they need to relax. There is no amount of success or failure outside of maybe being undefeated at this point, which of course would include, you know, wins over multiple high level mid-majors and number one Gonzaga, that would have them in a position to not need to win the Summit League tournament to be, you know, to accomplish their ultimate goal. So really what happens in November basketball is more about creating and growing the team that you need to be to win in Sioux Falls in March. So these games are largely meaningless for a team out of a conference that just is not going to qualify for an at-large. So just keep that in mind, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But before we move on to kind of the basketball roundup, Ryan, you have not been with us. We had an off week, and then before that, Cole and I took on the show. So in the last 3 weeks, I mean, what has been going on the basketball and the football side of just the recruiting?
Yeah, when you look on the football side of things, let's start with the offensive side of the ball, where NDSU is still involved with the top fullback in the country, a kid by the name of Jax Dineen, kid from Kansas. His brother actually goes to the University of Kansas.
Unbelievable player.
Yeah, he had a guy that, yeah, his older brother is a fantastic linebacker for the Jayhawks, who are now being coached by the Mad Hatter there and Les Miles. So the question is going to be, can NDSU be able to pull him out of a Kansas versus Kansas State recruiting battle, where Jax came out and said this week, yeah, I'm definitely still looking at NDSU, but I'm waiting to see what I want to do with Kansas and Kansas State. Now, we all know how much the fullback / H-back position has been used at NDSU. It would make a lot of sense for Jax to come here. But again, getting to the opportunity to play with your brother at Kansas, Les Miles called him on the first day that he was there. That meant a lot to him. So we're going to have to see how things play out with Mr. Dineen. You also have a Missouri State running back commit coming up to Fargo last weekend, a kid by the name of Ontario Russell, someone that has gained a lot of traction here during his senior season. I believe the Fighting Craig Bulls of Wyoming are heavily involved now as well. And as NDSU searches to potentially take another running back, Ontario Russell, now he has not flipped from Missouri State just yet. But as NDSU is 20 days away here from the early national signing day, things are going to get very interesting as Coach Kleiman's able to somewhat be able to get on the road, as he's also preparing to get to another FCS championship appearance. And then you also look at some of the guys on the offensive line. NDSU was able to pick up an offensive line commit by the name of Jacob Brock. We talked about that one before. But a kid like Tristan Roper, we're still waiting to hear word on what he is going to decide to do. There's another offensive lineman there. You also are trying to hear back from a couple of kids in Iowa as NDSU is trying to fill one more offensive line position. And then you also look at some of the Minnesota kids, the high profile Minnesota kids that are trying to wait out Big Ten offers and still trying to decide if they want to go to FCS. Guys like Evan Hall, a kid from Maple Grove, arguably one of the best running backs in the state of Minnesota. I think behind Jason Williamson from Owatonna, who's had one of the most impressive careers I've seen it in quite some time. But Evan is waiting to see if he is going to get offers from Northwestern, Indiana, and Illinois. All three Big Ten schools have told him, you are on the short list or the next guy up if we lose a running back commit or if we decide to take another running back. Now, the question is going to be, how long is Evan going to wait? Because if he waits too long, he's not going to have a spot at some of these schools like North Dakota State, but I know NDSU would still love to get a running back like Evan Hall. You also have a kid from Buffalo, Minnesota, by the name of Trayton Welsh, someone that camped at North Dakota State University, picked up an offer from NDSU. Now he's waiting to see what Iowa is going to do, because Iowa is going to come in today. The rumor is they might extend a full scholarship, and the connection there being Tim Polasek, former NDSU coach, now at Iowa, has a high, you know, he really likes Mr. Trayton Welsh there, who had a prolific season there at Buffalo High School in Minnesota. Then you also have a cornerback by the name of Omar Brown, because NDSU is likely going to take another defensive back, and Omar Brown is still waiting to see what Minnesota is going to do. He's also has a Big Ten offer from Indiana. He's seen some schools come by here this week to Minneapolis North, but we're all a little bit in a waiting game. NDSU is trying to see what these kids are going to do in terms of how much longer are you going to wait out your FBS/Big Ten opportunities before you come to the realization of they're just stringing you along. We've been on you for months. We want you tremendously bad, and you can come here and potentially make a bigger impact right away. So that's about the latest and greatest, as we're a little bit in a waiting game here, NDSU is, as these recruits, as we're getting close to crunch time, Ross, need to realize it's time to use the pot or get off the pot.
Ryan, do you have any idea how many slots you think are left for this staff? How many more takes there? And you don't have to necessarily break it down by position. Feel free to do so if you can. But how many more dominoes do you think we're kind of waiting to fall?
I just think probably two or three. Now, there's definitely two positions that I'm watching closely that I think NDSU really wants to take guys at, is in the defense back position and then at the running back position. That's why I mentioned the guys like Ontario Russell, Evan Hull. Then you look on the defensive side of things, Omar Brown at DB. You also have Jermani Harris, a Illinois defensive back, who took an official visit as well. I don't think there's too many spots left, and that's exactly where you want to be with this early signing period now. With everything so accelerated, when you get to these final couple of weeks, you don't want to have to fill half of your class or three-fourths of your class in these final 3 weeks, because the players aren't just of the higher quality that they would have been back in the summer and back in the spring. So I do think there's only a couple of spots left, or maybe a few spots left, and it's ultimately going to come down to need versus best position of it, or best player available. Same thing in like an NFL draft type of situation where, yes, you potentially have a need at the defensive back position, but if you have a guy like Trayton Welsh who wants to come in and he's one of your best players available on that board in the NDSU recruiting offense, how do you balance, well, should we take him or should we take a guy like Jermani Harris? Can we find a way to take both? All difficult decisions that are going to be coming ahead for Chris Klein and the staff.
Should we talk some hoops?
Let's talk some hoops. And so this NDSU basketball squad hasn't seen their season go quite the way that they were expecting. And we start in the Bahamas, Ross. You look at this NDSU team going 1-2 down on the island of Bahamas Showcase with a 78-89 loss to Miami of Ohio. Then they lose in overtime to an Incarnate Word team where Ross and I were talking about it in the pre-production meeting. I believe that NDSU team was up 15 points with 8 minutes to go. They squander the lead on a heroic shot as we get close to overtime. And then they beat Towson. So when you look at what NDSU was able to do down in the Bahamas, Ross, what are you going to be your main takeaways?
The loss to Miami of Ohio was a little bit disappointing. I think, you know, that they're picked second in their division in the MAC. The MAC is not great college basketball, but it's certainly, I think, a step up from the Summit League. So that would have been, you know, for a team picked fourth or fifth in the league, that would have been a good win. They were ahead in that game. Definitely proved they can play with a team the quality of Miami of Ohio, but just let a little run in the second half get away from them. They were unable to complete the comeback. The loss to Incarnate Word was bad. There's no way around that. It was a collapse. They were up by 15 with 6 or 8 minutes left to play in the game. The kid made an incredible miracle contested three to win that, to send it into overtime. They had no business going in, but those are the breaks. I mean, that's college basketball. So that was an unfortunate loss. I don't think any excuses can be made about that. I don't think there's any way to spin that. That was a bad loss, and that is something that the staff and the players are going to have to wear. But they responded really well. the next day and absolutely blew out a Towson team that's from the CAA, a decent, you know, mid-major league. I'm not sure Towson's going to have a great season. NDSU quite a bit more talented than they are, and they showed it. I mean, that was never in question, that game. It was probably even more of a blowout than the score ended up showing. And frankly, it looks to be that maybe those, you know, are the games that should have been on the schedule or could have been on the schedule, as you have a North Dakota State team, you know, that's picked in the middle of their league. And when they play against teams that are picked, again, in the middle of their leagues or towards the bottom of their leagues, they're winning those games. It's the fact that they were so aggressive in this scheduling, I think, that has the record. Now, you play the teams that are on your schedule. You should beat the teams that are on your schedule. And I think they have underachieved a little bit, but it really is a case of losing to good teams and teams that they were not favored to beat. Now, sometimes, you know, you have to beat teams that you're not favored to beat if you're going to get where you want to go. But I would not be as panicky as some are being, ultimately, with the Summit League schedule coming on down the road.
And then you look at what NDSU was able to do against an East Tennessee State team. Now, going into Johnson City and winning for an NDSU team coming off this Bahamas trip, maybe not the easiest of tasks, but NDSU heads down into Johnson City, Tennessee to take on East Tennessee State in an 18-point road loss there, Ross. Again, when you look at where NDSU's been there, heading into that Gonzaga game, they had now lost three of their last four.
Yeah, the East Tennessee, I mean, nobody actually wins in that building. You go down and look at their home record, it's very, very impressive. East Tennessee State is a team that's going to finish high in their league. The Bison were 10-point, 9.5-point underdogs in that game. We're not supposed to win that game. It was not supposed to be particularly close. I think you would have liked to see a little bit of a closer finish, obviously. I think you would have liked to see a little bit more fight out of NDSU there. They got down early and never really crawled back into the game. But that was just, again, a tough position, constantly away from home this season, struggling to get games in the Shack, and certainly not that they were looking ahead to Gonzaga, but they knew what they had in front of them on Monday night, and they did not play well in East Tennessee State either. And then that's a game, like I said, that they were not supposed to, you know, to win that game, but you would have liked to see a little bit more fight, a little bit closer end result there.
And then 2 days later, NDSU headed to Spokane, Washington to take on the number one team in the country, the Gonzaga. In Gonzaga, they're a 40-point loss, Ross, but this was much, much closer through the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I was joking. I think they were either up 2-0 or 4-2. But NDSU was in this game for 10 minutes. You know, if this was the NBA or even women's college basketball, you know, they would have been ahead after a quarter, or they would have been right in the game after a quarter. I think they were up 19-18 with 10 minutes left or something in the first half, and the Zags just you know, ran away with it. This is a NDSU team that's a little bit smaller this season. And when you've got guys like Rui Hachimura, you know, in the post, you're just at a tremendous disadvantage personnel-wise. This is not one of – there are teams, I think, in the top 25 that NDSU could stay within 10 or 12 of, but this is a terrible matchup for NDSU. Frankly, Gonzaga is. And they're a terrible matchup for anybody. They're a bad matchup for Duke, you know. Right. They're a bad matchup for four of the top 10 recruits in the entire country and, you know, one of the best college basketball coaches that ever lived. So this Gonzaga team is a Final Four caliber team. This was on the road. It's not as close as you would have liked it to be, but if you were realistically thinking that this NDSU team with three or four juniors and no seniors was going to go into the kennel and beat Gonzaga, I've got a bridge to sell you. This was not about trying to win that game. This was about growing as a team and embracing the opportunity to compete, and they did. They did compete. The Zags just shot at like 73% from the floor. I mean, what are you going to do when the other team shoots at 73% from the floor? You're going to lose the game. That's the deal. If the other team doesn't miss, you're not going to win the game.
So when you look ahead to this NDSU team, you look at the games upcoming for them. They're going to be playing at U.S. Bank Stadium here on Saturday against Drake, and they have Iowa State on Monday. But the more important question is here, with Cameron Hunter now out 6 weeks with that fractured wrist, you've got 20 minutes that you're going to have to replace at that backup point guard position. So what is your thoughts and what's your take on how NDSU should go about replacing the minutes that Cameron Hunter was able to provide?
So I think Samuelson can play the point a little bit. I think Jordan Horn can handle the ball a little bit if you need him to handle the ball. Mm-hmm. I think Vinny Shahid looks like he's in good enough shape to get the old Kai Cabela's treatment of 34 minutes a game.
Well, he's already playing 28 minutes a game, so what's an extra 6 minutes there?
Right. So I think you really could see Vinny get the Lawrence Alexander, Kai Cabela's treatment, especially if it's only for 6 weeks, because you're looking at, a potential return for a potential return from Cameron Hunter, the away game at Omaha, the home game against Dickinson State, maybe that January 10th matchup at home against Western Illinois. You're not looking at any more than 3 or 4 conference games without Cameron Hunter. So if you can get through the rest of this non-conference slate, which finally now include some home games. People forget NDSU blew out a very good UC Santa Barbara mid-major club at home and then went on this ridiculous road trip that won't stop until Monday against another high major. But I think it's important for them to be competitive or beat Drake, because it's going to be hard to explain, and not that there's anybody to answer to, but it's going to be hard to build off of. If you lose 4 straight heading into the Eastern Washington game at home after you just lost 3 out of 4. And these are, like I said, high-level games. New Mexico State probably going to win that league or come in second. Miami of Ohio might win their division in the MAC. East Tennessee State will be high in their league. Gonzaga might win the national championship. Good teams that they lost to, but they're still losses, and some of them are kind of non-competitive losses. So you have to improve. And so I think it's an important thing, even without Sam Griesel as a starter, even without Cameron Hunter, who's the most experienced point guard on the team, I think they have to give Drake a run on Saturday to really feel good about where they're going, because I'm not sure that I think it's realistic for them to give Iowa State a run on Monday.
Absolutely. So before we talk a little bit of football, Ross, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Dreaming of being faster, stronger, and more confident? Let the professionals at Dynasty Performance Training morph your body into dominating the competition. Their proven workouts will correct your form, hit your goals, reduce injuries, and enhance your life. And the team at Dynasty Performance Training will be with you every step, every lift, and every sprint on your way there. Visit DynastyPerformanceTraining.com and research the experts today for athletes, for adults, for teams, for you.
Yeah, let's talk about the big news from yesterday. I think every Bison fan that's downloading this podcast right now knows exactly what we're talking about, and that is the fact that I would say NDSU's chief rival over the last two and a half seasons has pretty clearly not been a team in their conference. James Madison University came to North Dakota State and won in 2016. They snapped NDSU's streak in national championships, and they did so kind of loudly. And Houston is a fire and brimstone kind of guy, and basically makes no apologies, nor should he. But I mean, that was a team that I think rubbed NDSU fans the wrong way a little bit. Any team that you lose to is going to rub you the wrong way. And then the two clubs went into a rematch, of course, in 2017 in the national championship game, with North Dakota State coming out on top. They've been seated in the same side of the bracket this year, where James Madison, after a bit of a down year with the graduation of Brian Shore, ended up as the de facto 9 seed, in my opinion, hosting a game with the right to go to number 8 Colgate. Number 8, of course, will face off with number 1 in the quarters. That's how the bracket works. So James Madison, lined up to potentially be in Fargo next week, has reportedly lost their head football coach, Mike Houston, to UNC Charlotte. I think they might just be going by Charlotte these days, but the rumor, and you know, I feel, I guess, at least comfortable discussing it. The rumor is about a $900,000 to $1 million contract. Now, Houston makes about $500,000 at JMU now, so it's roughly doubling his salary. You move from the CAA to Conference USA. That'd be the same, you know, the same conference that would have like the University of Marshall, not UCF, but I believe FAU and FIU are in that conference. It's a big conference, mid-major league in the G5, and some, you know, some place where if you build up a program like Charlotte, maybe you get the North Carolina job after Mack Brown retires. Maybe you're looking in the Southeast for a gig. This is kind of your step up to the big time. If you want to think about it in NDSU terms, this is kind of like Gene Taylor taking the associate AD job at Iowa so that he was able to take the Kansas State job, and that would be one way to think about it. But it has tremendous, I think, implications for this season because of the early signing day period, Ryan.
Yeah, that's the bigger point, or the larger, you know, 1,000-foot view from my point in things is, if he is going to remain at James Madison, of which it sounds like he's going to until James Madison loses in Fargo here next weekend, that only gives him around 2 weeks, week and a half, to put together a recruiting class at the University of Charlotte. And that is a extremely, extremely tough ask. And for whoever is the next James Madison head coach, again, I know that Mike Houston's not thinking about this. That only leaves them. I mean, James Madison has to go out and hire somebody to salvage their own recruiting class.
Right.
So it's just an interesting way to, as Ross said, it's been rumored that he is going to take the Charlotte job. Now, he hasn't officially taken it yet. And so it sounds like he's going to finish out the season for James Madison as their head coach and then potentially accept it from there. But just interesting. To be thinking now for all these James Madison players, is this in the back of their mind? I mean, they have to go to Colgate here this weekend. Now, they are 6-point road favorites, but knowing that your head coach is essentially not denying that he is going to take the job, you have to think, is this Colgate game for James Madison going to be a lot more interesting than maybe it would have been if none of this news had come out, Ross?
Well, and does he even want to beat NDSU in 2 weeks? I know that sounds dumb, but it puts him way behind the eight ball. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's where, if somehow James Madison wins this game, I mean, maybe Mr. Houston is able to parlay this into a bigger job than Charlotte, considering this is an NDSU team that is undefeated right now. They're the odds-on favorite. It was just a lot of different things to kind of dive into here. And again, we mentioned it because they are the main rival. You are looking at an NDSU team likely going to take on this James Madison team in Fargo next week and before they take on potentially in South Dakota State before we talk about the national championship. But just a lot of different mind games that you have to wonder, where is this James Madison team going to be at potentially before they come into Fargo?
Right, and so like Louisville's open in that region, Georgia Tech is open in that region.
Right.
And those would be pretty big jumps for Coach Houston. But if you look at Appalachian State, their coach, I think, is a very realistic option now that Brohm's not going to leave Louisville for the Louisville job. I would argue pretty easily that App State is a higher-level job than Charlotte, probably has more money to offer Houston than Charlotte. He could be playing a little bit of a waiting game, but you never know. And the other thing to think about is, and this is just something I know because I know, in 2013, when Coach Bowl left, the agreement was that he would leave alone any player that was verbally committed to North Dakota State. He would not try to get them to go to Wisconsin. I think that little pact was broken on a number of occasions. I specifically know he tried to get Easton Stick. But in general, there were guys like Brian Hill, the cornerback Ryan Winters, who actually I think now plays for Illinois State or just graduated from Illinois State after transferring from Wyoming. There was another defensive end whose name is, I think, Daniel Vega. It doesn't matter, whatever. The point is that there were guys that, including Brian Hill, who's an NFL running back now, that were part of the recruiting process for North Dakota State that were not committed yet, that ended up verbaling to Wyoming because they had this fancy new FBS opportunity. So if you lose Mike Houston, with 12 days to go. What is to stop him? Who knows? I don't know what Charlotte has committed. I'm not a...
Neither do I.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it'd be great, but I think you bring up a great point in App State, because that App State coaching staff, I have a ton of respect for, especially their defensive coordinator, who I know that before Minnesota decided to make their interim defensive coordinator, Joe Rossi, D.C., Minnesota had a lot of interest in App State's defensive coordinator. He has done a fantastic job with that defense, with that secondary. And so if you're Mike Houston, maybe you want to see if App State's head coach ends up bringing, you know, ends up going to Louisville there. And if that's the case, App State would be a much better opportunity to walk into than a Charlotte. So, I mean, either way, you have to be wondering, what is the state of the James Madison coaching staff going into that game potentially next weekend? And what is the state of their players? And are we going to see it directly affect their play on the field?
And again, like I said, are their recruits safe? You know, if you take the Charlotte job, is the recruiting class or some of the players from the James Madison recruiting group, kids that have committed to, I would say, a top three program in the FCS, are they better off than the kids? Are they more talented than the kids that Charlotte was able to get? And do you flip them and do you bring them to Charlotte with you, kind of saying that you committed to me, not necessarily the university, you committed to our vision, and our vision is now in Charlotte. But anyway, it's very fascinating. There are a lot of moving parts, and I think that this early signing period has really screwed with the FCS to FCS, excuse me, the FCS to FBS coaching mobility, because the good coaches that are going to be offered FBS jobs are usually those who are in the playoffs. So anyway, it's wild, but we've talked about this for long enough. Let's do a little Montana State preview.
So when you look at this Montana State team, Ross, they're 8-4 in the year. Maybe the only two games that are worth talking about, potentially, I guess three games, would be two at the start of the year for this Montana State football team. They were able to take on Western Illinois in Bozeman. They won 26-23. That following week, they headed on out to Brookings, South Dakota to take on South Dakota State, lost by 31, 45-14. And then this team took on Eastern Washington in Bozeman and lost by 17. So this isn't actually, you know, it is an 8-win Big Sky team, Ross. But when you look at the point spread for this game, it shouldn't shock anyone that NDSU is a 4-touchdown favorite here at home.
No, I don't think it should. I mean, if you think that this team is right along the lines of a Western Illinois from a talent perspective, and the game is not in Bozeman or in Western Illinois, which is, of course, where NDSU played this year, was in Macomb, you should have serious reservations about that team's ability to be competitive in Fargo. I think, you know, the transitive property is a very dangerous property to try to use when handicapping, when previewing, when scouting. But you have two like opponents, and you'd be an idiot not to at least pay a little bit of attention. They struggled with Western. Western isn't as good as North Dakota State. They got blown out by South Dakota State. South Dakota State's not as good as North Dakota State. So, again, the transitive property of football, very dangerous. But when considering like opponents, it doesn't spell a great outcome, I don't think, for the Bobcats.
No, it doesn't. And when you look at this, Montana State offense is a spread running type of offense, because you look at their stats on the year. This is a Montana State team averaging a lot on the ground. They're averaging 236 yards per game on the ground, over 5.5 yards per carry, with 36 rushing touchdowns in 12 games. That's pretty good. And when you look at their rushers, they have two guys tied, their quarterback, Mr. Troy Anderson, and then their running back, Isaiah Infante. Both have rushed the ball for 183 times on the year. Their quarterback, Ross, has 20 rushing touchdowns and is averaging 7 yards per carry. So here we are talking about another running quarterback.
Yeah, if I should start a segment on this show called Ross's If You're Looking for Hope, because I think I feel like I start every opposing preview with some part of that phrase. And if you're looking for hope for Montana State, I mean, it is in the fact that they do spread you out, and that is the North Dakota State Achilles heel, if you will. They do run the quarterback, which is another thing that NDSU has struggled with a bit. So if they do spread out the formation and they do get Jabril Cox detached from the formation. They're playing kind of a 42 with Jabril playing more of a Sam or more of a money backer type deal where you're out covering slot receivers and you're just playing kind of six on six with NDSU's four down. And then, of course, Marlette and Jordheim, it's a little bit different of an athletic matchup. At the same time, though, I do really believe that Montana State's going to have to throw the football to win. I think it's such a dangerous thing to get into a one-dimensional type of deal when you're playing against North Dakota State. And even if you're going to tell me that the two dimensions are, well, there's the quarterback run and the running back run, it's not enough. I mean, if NDSU can safely deploy that eighth defender to pay attention to the quarterback, and you can't win your single high matchups, you can't win your one-on-ones on the outside, you're going to be in trouble. And so if this kid, and he has not really shown the ability to win games with his arm, if he can't win this game with his arm, they're not going to be able to. Even though it's a spread option, even though it's quarterback run, they're not going to be able to outscore NDSU's offense simply running the football. They're too one-dimensional, and the Bison defense just doesn't allow stuff like that.
No, and when you look at Troy Anderson, with how prolific he's been with his legs, he has been the opposite of that with his arm. He's only averaging about throwing the ball about 14, 15 times a game. Three passing touchdowns to six interceptions, and in likely a negative game script game where Montana State's not going to be able to run and run and run because they're just going to run out of time. We're going to have to see if Troy Anderson is able to do it with his arm. And then when flip side, you look at things for this Montana State defense, it isn't exactly going swimmingly for them as well. They're averaging 27 points a game against their defense. They've given up 26 rushing touchdowns for an average of 177 rushing yards per game. You also look at how teams have been able to get against them through the air. They're averaging 225 yards per game through the air. And again, Ross, we mentioned all this because it's the Big Sky, not exactly known for stout defensive play. And I think you see that reflected here on Montana State's defensive stats.
Right, and I think that's the other issue, is the one-dimensional offense from Montana State, and then the lack of defense. And in general, you know, we call the Big Sky the Big Fluff. There's not much defense involved in that entire league. It's kind of the Big 12 of the FCS in that generally in the championship game, the Big 12's not there. And also, you know, in general, that there's no defense that's played. So that's, I think, where we're at with the Big Sky, and Montana State doesn't seem to be any different. NDSU offensively is as good as any team in the country. They have the ability to throw the ball with Easton Stick, who I think is the best player in the subdivision. They obviously have the ability to run the ball. They've got a talented group of backs that are now coming off of 14 days rest. That's a big, big deal. And this defense, I think, would be a pretty rough matchup for North Dakota State no matter what. Coming off 2 weeks rest, throw it out the window. You're going to have to outscore. I mean, I think Montana State would probably have to get to 35-38 to win this game. I don't see that happening any possible way.
No. And I think to round out things for today, Ross, I think the biggest thing is you can't be your worst enemy here, and you can't be looking past this Montana State team. Now, it's been that same conversation all year long. That's how you were able to grab the number one overall seed. That's how you're able to remain undefeated. But you can't be looking ahead to potentially James Madison in the quarterfinals or South Dakota State in the semifinals before meeting up with someone in Frisco. And that's where it's got to be. You have to maintain focus. Get them down 2, 3, 4 scores at halftime, and then you can start to think about it a little bit, but you can't be looking ahead too far, especially now that it's one and done.
Exactly, and that's, again, you know, another, if you're looking for hope, if you're looking for hope for Montana State, your hope, of course, is that NDSU is looking ahead to their potential matchup with James Madison for the third time in 3 years, and they're not paying attention to what they need to do to beat the Bobcats. I don't think that's going to be the case, but that is what you're concerned about. And I think, like I said, if you're really looking for hope, that might be a place you might find it if you're Montana State.
All right, so we will be back next week to talk about hopefully another NDSU football win. We'll hopefully be able to talk about NDSU beating Drake at US Bank Stadium and then keeping it close with the team in Ames. So that's going to do it today for this edition of Bison Report Radio. If you can, please check out all the great work we're able to do on thebisonreport.com. If you also can rate and review us, that also helps other NDSU fans find us on your favorite podcasting platform. So for Ross, I'm Ryan Burns. We'll talk to you guys next week. Go Bison.